I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Happy. Yes, it is. It is a game day Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Houston, here on Sports Radio 610, it is a game day Thursday. As I embark on a journey that will have me doing radio for 14 hours over the next 28-hour period.
That's right, baby.
You're not far behind, though.
No. But I don't have to do much. I'm checked out mentally already. I'm just here to enjoy the game.
Okay, good.
I decided a while back that on game days, I gotta not care how good I sound on the radio because I want to enjoy the games. It's the only reason I do this job is because I want to be able to have a job where I'm actually just watching sports. And then I realized one day, oh, I'm watching these sports, but I'm not really enjoying it as much as I should, so why am I even doing this job? So yeah. I said, well, screw the job. I want to watch sports and talk about them, and then if they fire me, so be it.
Yeah.
I'll just go back to watching sports.
You made a conscious decision that you're going to enjoy this stuff.
I'm going to check out.
Yeah.
And I think I've been better at my job since then.
That's good.
Sometimes when you stop caring, that's when you actually really make a breakthrough.
That is true. And I would, not to jump past all day today, but you and I will probably be a little sleep deprived tomorrow. I'll definitely be sleep deprived tomorrow. People have said that you and I do better shows on less sleep.
It's it works once or twice. That's the problem, is sometimes that's true, but then sometimes people make the mistake of thinking, oh, if I'm hungover, I'm actually pretty good and free and loose. Yeah. But then when you come in every day hungover,
you can only cash that chip so many times.
Yeah, it unravels pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking to a guy once who had been in NFL Europe. He was one of these guys when NFL Europe was still around where he'd go and he'd play in NFL Europe, then he'd get a shot in training camp, then he'd go back to NFL Europe. And he was telling me it in completely earnestly, yeah, so one night in Germany, we went out, and I got wasted the night before a game. And then I balled out the next day. So that's what I do now. And I'm like, dude, you're on like your third tour through NFL Europe.
Yeah.
When you have these good games in NFL Europe, you're doing it against guys who aren't going to play in the NFL.
Right.
At some point, you got to understand and recognize, no, it's not working for you.
So
you haven't made an NFL team yet.
So did he ever make an NFL team?
No.
Was it because he drank too much or because he wasn't good enough?
I think it was a combination of the. He would have never known if he was actually good enough because he was in. He was rationalizing it to an extreme degree.
Right, I got
the guy had issues.
Yeah. Including he didn't make an NFL team, so he didn't get that big payday. That was probably his biggest issue. But
couldn't support his drinking habit.
Right, exactly. The Texans are going to have a big issue tonight if they don't win this game. I've been listening to a lot of the. This game's now on the radar nationally, so I've been listening to a lot of the national talk about this game. And I've heard some calling it a de facto playoff game, like an elimination game. And I don't feel that it's an elimination game only because you look at the AFC standings. And as I said yesterday, I think Buffalo is going to come back to the pack. If the Texans lose, they're in the middle of this just sort of quagmire of teams that are mediocre to average teams. And the Texans, I think the toughest part for the Texans if they lose this game is you get the Patriots coming up next. That's the hardest part. And if it's true that, hey, it was great that we have a short week after this loss to the Ravens. If they lose to the Colts tonight, then you can't sit here and go, well, at least we got 10 days to get ready for the Patriots. Like, both things can't be true. Otherwise, and it doesn't matter how long you have till after a game. So their take on Sunday was, well, this short turnaround is going to be a good thing because we get to forget about the Ravens loss quickly. And I kind of believe that after watching O'Brien do his press conferences this week and sort of listening to the buzz around the team, is that the short week did kind of force everybody to forget about the Ravens because here are the Colts. I think there could be an opposite effect if they lose this game tonight, where all of a sudden now you've got what's supposed to be a de facto bye week for them. Everybody's spending 10 days talking about how they're 6-5. The division's almost out the window. They're saying it's basically 70% chance right now that the Texans make the playoffs as of today.
As of today.
The division's basically a coin flip. The only thing that's keeping them the favorite in the division right now is they have the home field advantage tonight.
But that's where the statistics get weird, because if they lose this game, supposedly they go down to, what, a 25% chance?
Is that what it is? I mean,
they flip-flop with the Colts. I had the stat down there, and then I thought that you had it, so I deleted it.
Yeah.
So now we're relying on my fragile memory.
I think we can just say without having to quantify it exactly, tonight is a huge, huge game for the Texans. The downside is massive.
It's massive. I'm going to say this, though. I don't always trust these statistics that show probability of winning the division and everything when they fluctuate that quickly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Landry takes it one step further. Landry doesn't trust science in general.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like any statistic I would bring up about like some statistical study, he's, I don't trust that.
Did he have a botched surgery at some point in his life?
I don't know.
Like that's what made me skeptical of science.
He doesn't trust doctors.
Right?
Yeah.
So now I don't trust math or any of the scientific disciplines.
But you should be skeptical. When people feed you stats, you shouldn't just be like, oh, okay, that's a stat, so it must be true. You should be skeptical. I'm always skeptical of these win probabilities, both within the game and from week to week. You know, within the game where they say, wow, at the end of the third quarter, they had a 90% chance of winning. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, they had a 10% chance of winning. Yeah. Then they all of a sudden had a 90%. Ah, screw you, stats.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I guess then just to subjectively talk about this thing, if they lose tonight, they're 6-5, and the Patriots are coming to town, so you're probably staring at 6-6. With the last month of the season, it looked a lot easier on paper a month ago than it does now. The Titans are actually playing some decent football.
Yeah.
The Broncos have lost multiple games on last-second field goals. And who knows what Tampa Bay is going to be at the end of the year. But for now, just eating what's on our plate tonight, the Colts come into town. The downside is huge. That said, I'm picking the Texans tonight. I do feel like a lot of the dynamics of the flow of a season, losing big the way they did on Sunday, teams usually bounce back from that. The Texans have typically been pretty good bouncing back from losses like that under, you know, double-digit losses, as we've talked about this week, under Bill O'Brien. I think Deshaun's going to play better. I think a big key will be getting Will Fuller back. The injury news came out yesterday. The Colts are winning the battle of the injury news right now because it looks like T.Y. Hilton's going to play. He was a full participant on Tuesday. Eric Ebron was a full participant on Tuesday. Pierre Desir, who has done a nice job against DeAndre Hopkins the last couple times they played, was a full participant. The only real big injury right now, Costanzo was a full participant. He was on the injury report earlier this week, their left tackle. The only name that jumps out at you on the injury report that will not play tonight for the Colts is Marlon Mack, who tore up the Texans in a playoff game last year. But his backup ran for over 100. Jonathan Williams ran for over 100 yards last week against the Jags. So they've got guys. And Nyheim Hines has done a nice job as sort of a third down out of the backfield kind of back. I'm cautiously sort of nervous about this game, but I do think the Texans are going to win tonight. And if they win tonight, then they're in pretty good shape going into the Patriots game. Then that 10 days will feel like rest, not scrutiny.
They're in good shape, except that they're going against the Patriots. I guess, what do they have to do tonight that actually makes you feel good about the Texans versus the Patriots? That's what makes me nervous.
I'll tell you what they have to do.
Yeah.
Unlike all their other home games this year, they have to play a game that doesn't go down to the last possession. I just want them to win. Mm-hmm. I just want them to have one more point than the Colts at the end of the night. But your question is a different question. To feel good about how they're going to do against the Patriots, they need to have a win tonight where you go, okay, they were clearly the better team.
Right. They need to physically outplay them, not just squeak it out somehow or have a couple of big miraculous plays.
Right.
That's where I'm nervous. And I can write off some things about last week's game. For one, the Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are just a juggernaut right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're tearing through everybody. They tore through the Patriots, who have a good defense. So I'm not as concerned about that. But I am concerned just about the state of the secondary. This is a skeleton crew they have back there. Bradley Roby might play tonight. We're not sure about Bradley Roby or Will Fuller.
Right.
And Will Fuller is the other big concern. Without Will Fuller, this offense is a completely different unit when it goes up against good defenses. So we've seen the issues that this Colts defense can present to Deshaun Watson. If Will Fuller plays tonight, I feel really good about their chances. If Will Fuller doesn't, I feel awful about their chances.
Wow, he's that big this game.
He's huge for them. You look at DeAndre Hopkins' entire season and how much of it has been affected by the absence of Will Fuller. Everybody's focused on DeAndre Hopkins, and it's limiting what DeAndre. I mean, DeAndre's money, and he's churning out first downs and whatnot. But he's also averaging the fewest yards per reception that he's had in his entire career.
To your point, just in thinking back through, the three-game winning streak that the Colts have against the Texans, going back to the, I forget what week it was last year, I think week 14, where they beat him, they snapped the nine-game winning streak. That was a win here at NRG Stadium. The playoff win, which was terrible, at NRG Stadium. And then the game in week 7, Will Fuller went out in the first quarter of week seven. So I'm when I say this, I know it's not literally correct, but it's functionally correct. Will Fuller has missed all three of those games. Mm-hmm. In the games that they've played against the in the games they've played against the Colts during this three-game losing streak that they have, Will Fuller has basically not played in any of those three games, and they've looked pedestrian offensively in all three of those games.
Other than the 6 yards that he put up before he got injured last night.
Functionally, he didn't play.
I was trying to remember how much it was. It was 6 yards.
He went out in the first quarter.
Yeah, one target, one reception, right. 6 yards. So. And it's not completely that. It's not, you know, because DeAndre's yards per reception was lower before DeAndre or before Fuller went out too. Yeah. But it just adds such an element to that offense. And I'm really happy about some of the things they've done offensively this year. The Colts make me nervous. And that's where I am right now. Now, in terms of the winning the division probability and everything, it is really simple. It's just one of these things where you've got two teams with 6-4 records and The Colts end up being two games ahead of you in the division if they win this game. So that's one game ahead of you, but with the
head-to-head.
Yeah, it's the head-to-head.
You can't tie with them. Yeah. Either. You got to beat them free.
It's a 1.5 game lead, effectively.
Basically, yeah, yeah. So it's a huge game tonight, man. Well, I'm excited for it. We'll get started with the pregame out at Bud Plaza at 4:20. Kickoff is at 7:20. Get there early. I think there are some concerns about traffic around the stadium tonight. If you're not going to the game and you live down near where Seth and I live, down near the Pearland Way, I would say maybe go the little back roads down Buffalo Speedway or South Post Oak and go hit the Beltway instead of zipping past the stadium and taking 288. Do everybody a big favor so they can get there and get nice and hammered before the game. And if you're tailgating, drink responsibly, but drink just enough to where you're going to be at your peak loudest.
Lose your inhibitions.
Yes.
Yeah. Just be free out there.
Right.
Also, there's an app that you're supposed to download so you can be part of the pregame show. They want you to get in early.
Okay.
Go to HoustonTexans.com and download the app. It's some kind of light show that the fans are going to be part of.
The pregame, with your phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Advanced stats on the Deshaun Watson.
Quantify it.
Post Will Fuller. 15 passes greater than 15 yards. He's 7 of 16. Wait, no, that's pre-Fuller, isn't it?
No, that's post-Fuller.
7 of 16 for 212 yards.
Yeah.
26. This is written weird. We added, my computers, I'm a mess today.
Passes greater than 15 yards downfield since Will Fuller got hurt.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is completing 7 of 16, so less than 50% for 212 yards. His DVOA is 26.9%. People go, what's DVOA? Well, it's an advanced stat, and I'll just basically tell you that Deshaun Watson is he's better than twice as good at that when Fuller is on the field. He's bottom line, he's much better at throwing the football down the field when Will Fuller is on the field.
Yeah, I miss Will Fuller, so he might be back tonight.
Yeah.
So. I'm gonna funk from this Thanksgiving feast we had at lunch yesterday.
Are you okay?
I didn't eat dinner. I had a straight.
Did you bring food to eat?
I've got an apple in there.
It's 6:13.
I'm not hungry yet. I don't know. I just,
I'm like a
boa constrictor. I've got a feral hog inside of me. In addition to my other feral hog that I already have. So that's where
it's going to be. Good Thursday.
Yeah.
We're off and running on Thursday. A couple other little nuggets, sort of dovetailing off of what Seth and I were talking about in the open. Texans and Colts tonight. Deshaun Watson's time to be sacked last week. If we're trying to quantify the impact of Will Fuller on this game, and make no mistake, that's the part of the pregame show set that I'm going to be sitting there nervously sort of rubbing my hands together, wringing my hands, waiting to see is the inactive report, to see if Fuller and Roby. Roby is really important, too, because of just the bodies they need in the secondary right now. Deshaun Watson's time to be sacked last week against the Ravens, super slow. And if you just think back to that game, a lot of the sacks, I think a lot of people think back to the very first one where Deshaun fumbled the football. It was 5 seconds per sack. It took them 5 seconds to sack him. So it wasn't like, except on one or two of them, it wasn't like the offensive line was just getting bull rushed and beaten right off of the snap. A couple of them they did.
Yeah.
But there were 7 sacks in the game. Most of them were coverage sacks. Will Fuller is basically like a bug spray for coverage sacks. You spray Will Fuller on coverage sacks and they go away.
Especially when you say you want to run more play action, especially play action from under center. That's so effective. those plays take a long time to develop. And if you've got a guy like Will Fuller, they actually come open, you know, and they actually stretch the defense. Without Will Fuller, it's just not the same thing. So Will Fuller is huge there. The other part of that, too, is yes, they were coverage sacks, but as we all know, Deshaun also needs to know and understand and realize when to get rid of the ball in those situations. Mm-hmm. Watch Jacoby Brissett. Like, Jacoby Brissett's not nearly the quarterback Deshaun Watson is. When I watched last week's game versus the Jaguars, there were a couple times where Jacoby Brissett did a really good job of getting rid of the football, especially on first and second down, and then making pinpoint accurate throws on third down. I don't know why Deshaun moved away from that last week. I don't know why. And I'm not blaming it on him, because coverage was a big issue. Protection was an issue at times. But sometimes it was, okay, it's not going to be a good play, but just don't get sacked.
Yeah.
Just get rid of the football.
And I think one way to sort of express the importance of that, just again, not to bury people under statistics early in the morning, but I think sometimes these are easy ways to sort of understand how important it is. These are both teams that are really, really good converting first downs on short yardage situations.
Yeah.
Getting into third and two and third and one, staying ahead of the chains. When the Texans offense was really humming, you know, from about the Falcons game through about the Raiders game, really, you know, about the time they got to London, and including the London game, when the offense was really humming in that period from about week 5 to week 9, they were doing a really good job of staying ahead of the chains. It's no coincidence that in those 5 games, they gave up 7 sacks in those 5 games. So they're in 2nd and 8, and like 2nd and 8 and 2nd and 7 is fine if Deshaun Watson is your quarterback. Perfectly fine. 2nd and 12, 2nd and 13 starts to become problematic. It eliminates parts of the playbook that you can use. Deshaun's got to sit back there. You become more predictable. These are two teams that are not only really good at converting and moving the chains in those situations, they take a lot of risks, too. These are both coaches that all of a sudden, I say all of a sudden, more all of a sudden with Bill O'Brien. We know that Frank Reich's not afraid to go for it on fourth down. These are two coaches that, if they're in 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1, are completely confident in their ability of their team to convert.
You know, I've almost gotten to the point now where I care more.
They both lead the league. They tied for the league lead in 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1 conversions.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point now where I care more about the Bill O'Brien versus Frank Reich rivalry than the Bill O'Brien versus Bill Belichick rivalry.
Well, we see it more, right?
We see it more. Yeah. It's within the division.
It's the one that matters more.
It's the whole Frank Reich dynamic where people hated him already from back in the Oilers days. There's all that. And there's also the fact that Frank Reich seems to be getting better looking as he gets older.
You hate that.
I was talking
to
a woman at our potluck yesterday.
Yeah.
Talking about how, who's Frank Reich? Oh my gosh, I never noticed him before. Yeah, it's annoying.
And she said this?
He needs to be put in his place, yeah.
So when someone's running near the sidelines, do they need to reach out and
mar his face?
Yeah, somehow give him a jagged scar across
his
face.
He ain't pretty no more.
Right. Like hey guys,
no, a scar would make him more even rugged and good looking.
You're probably
right. You need to disfigure him
You're
somehow.
Probably right.
It has to be one of these things like in Fight Club.
Yeah.
Where Ed Norton Jr. beats up Ed Norton Jr. Was there a comedian in the 80s? Named Ed Norton or something.
I think you're thinking of The Neighbor and The Honeymooners.
No, that's different. I know who you're talking about. That's Ed. That's Norton. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, Frank.
You're thinking of Ken Norton Jr.
Yeah. with Frank Reich, it's the fact that he's in the division.
Yeah.
It's the fact that he's doing this year, especially with Jacoby Brissett, a decidedly non-franchise quarterback. It's one thing I want to ask about. We're going to have NFL Network's James Palmer on at 6:35. I'd like to ask him about just what the Colts are planning on doing with Jacoby Brissett, what he's hearing about that. Brissett's got 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah, you're saying, is he the solution long-term?
He's right in that. Boy, where would you put him in relation to Andy Dalton? Was his ceiling higher than Andy Dalton?
I would say yes, because we know what Andy Dalton's ceiling is.
Yeah.
It's getting to the playoffs with everything right around you and then not winning a playoff game. Like Jacoby Brissett, the way this Colts team is structured, they could win a playoff game, at least one. And they could, and if they get the right opponent and if they get a couple turnovers, they could win another playoff
game. And that's why I say, if anybody's out there screaming, yes, he's better than Andy Dalton. I ask Andy Dalton because there used to be this thing called the Dalton scale, which is, it seems like, above the Dalton scale is the level of quarterback you need to actually compete for a championship. But below the Dalton scale, he's not your franchise quarterback. And Andy Dalton was plunked right there. I believe Dan Hans is from the NFL Network created this scale.
Yeah, I like it.
From NFL.com.
I like it.
And so Is Jacoby Brissett above that level where you'd actually pay him franchise caliber money?
Who? He's above Dalton. See, I never would have paid Dalton franchise caliber money.
Right, but and yet.
But he did.
But he's too good to cut. The Dalton scale is, I'm not sure he's good enough to win unless everything's perfect, but he's too good to cut.
I put it this way. It wouldn't surprise me if they drafted a quarterback next year.
Yeah, I think you could. I think, and they're paying Dalton pretty good money, right? Or excuse me, they're paying Brissett pretty good money right now. And I think
15, 17 million a year, something like that.
You pull one of those things. I looked it up this morning. For a guy that was a third round pick as a quarterback and still hasn't played a whole bunch, he's made over 16 million in his career.
Good for him.
Do you dangle with 1 year left on his contract? You try to lock him up on a 3 year deal that's not league leading money, but doesn't preclude you from drafting another quarterback.
Yes, because unless you're Kirk Cousins, a 3 year deal is basically a 1 year deal in the NFL.
Right.
So yeah. So the Myles Garrett had his appeal yesterday up in New York. I want to, before we go to the commissioner pain aspect of this, because I want you to dole out the punishments on all these things. Because Ogunjobi had his one-game suspension held up, which I totally agree with. Him shoving Mason Rudolph was stupid. I want to get your thoughts on Pouncey. He's going to be appealing here or has appealed. And Mason Rudolph. Apparently, Myles Garrett's defense in this whole thing when he sat down with the league was he used Antonio Smith's 2 preseason game and 1 regular season game suspension as sort of a template for, hey, look, this guy swung a helmet at another player. I swung a helmet at another player. Why am I getting 6 games? Do you feel like his argument holds water?
It doesn't hold water. I mean, it does hold water. They'll consider it. It does make you think, okay, do we need to adjust this downward? These are the 2 competing precedents here. Albert Haynesworth kicked Andre Girard in the face with his cleats and got 5 games. That was a pretty bad thing he did. He didn't necessarily...
He, like, dragged his spike across his forehead.
He dragged his spike, which I feel like an actual curb stomp would have been way worse. Like, that's almost Million Dollar Baby, the end of that movie. Yeah. So, I think that was 5 games. Antonio Smith had Richie Incognito's hand up inside his face. And, by the way, earlier in that game, Richie Incognito had dived at Antonio Smith's knees after a play a couple times. It was really bad. It was annoying how poorly covered that was. So, Richie Incognito had been dirty all game long. He has his hand up inside Antonio Smith's face. Antonio's fighting back and grabs a helmet in one motion, kind of takes a swipe without his arm extended, mind you.
Yeah.
I feel like it was almost a little bit of a, hey,
just
stay
a message.
Back.
Yeah,
shot across the bow.
Right.
And crucially, he didn't connect.
Right.
Like, intent matters, but so does the actual whatever the hell happened.
Absolutely.
So was Antonio Smith lucky that it didn't connect? Hell yeah. If it had connected, I'm guessing it would have been way, way worse. So the fact that he didn't connect and the fact that it was all one motion is different than Myles Garrett standing back there with his arm kind of cocked and
windmilling
waiting.
Him, yeah.
For look, I know, look. Mason Rudolph's in my face with that annoying little stupid haircut of his and his whiny, like, my daddy's a lawyer, look about him. Yeah, I'd want to do it too, but you got to restrain yourself there. It's almost, premeditate isn't the right word, but it feels almost more premeditated with Myles Garrett than with Antonio Smith.
I want to rapid fire the players that you involve real quickly. Do you think they got it right in upholding Ogunjobi's 1-game suspension, or would you have given him more?
I would have, I think that's all right.
1 game?
1 game, yeah.
Okay, and you would have upheld it, Commissioner Payne?
Yes, I would have upheld that.
Marquise Pouncey got a 3-game suspension for defending his quarterback,
I felt like 3 games was right. The kicking in the head, defending your quarterback, my ass. People, you get thrown out of the game for actually entering a fight area. You're kicking a dude on the ground in the head. Luckily, he had a helmet on, so that's what keeps the 3. If he didn't have the helmet on, I would have been 7, 8, 9, because Myles Garrett by that point was somewhat restrained.
So you would uphold the 3-game suspension?
Yep.
And then Myles Garrett suspension for the rest of the season. 6 games, basically.
Yeah. But now Mason Rudolph, though, who's, they still haven't
they
issued a final ruling
on. It sounds like they're going to issue him a fine.
I would give him a pretty hefty fine. There's not really precedent for suspending somebody for not actually tearing somebody's helmet off.
Does the heftiness of the fine, does where he was drafted in his current rookie contract factor in the heft of the fine?
No.
How hefty?
You tried to kick a large man in the groin and rip his helmet off, you dumbass. But you were too weak to actually pull it off.
50
and
then, G's? 100 G's?
50 G's for that, and then for your stupid face, another $25,000 on top
that.
Of it. $75,000.
And Commissioner Payne would say it's for his stupid face, too.
He looks so unlike a Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback. And what are you doing? Pittsburgh Steelers quarterbacks are supposed to be ugly and kind of a little out of shape. You know, the Bradshaws, the Roethlisbergers, even the Tommy Maddoxes. You, sir, are no Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback.
James Palmer's with the NFL Network. Used to cover the Texans here back in 2013 and 2014 for the Comcast Sports Network. He's with the NFL Network now. He's in town. He's been in town for basically the last 2 weeks covering the Texans. What has he seen being around this team from the team over the last couple days and their ability to flush that Ravens loss? We'll find out. James Palmer next. Texans and the Colts. Pregame starts at 4:20. Be me and Seth. I just told Ali that she asked if we is there a nickname for you guys. I said, yeah, we're the Dream Team, man.
It's not a very original nickname.
That's what people are. I said that's what people are calling us, and by people I mean me. Yeah. So 4:20, 7:20 kickoff, and then Clint Sterner and I will have the post game.
That's right, everybody. The show's out at 4:20. If you catch our drift. Speaking of which, don't we have James Palmer on the line?
Yeah. We do. All we got right. James Palmer, the NFL Network, joining us right now. Our good friend. Who was out at the Texans facility early this morning and now jumping on with us. James, it's good to talk to you. Did you text J.J. Watt like 25,000 other people yesterday?
Yeah, I was the only person that was like, hey, question, do you think they'll use an IR spot on you if you could return by the Super Bowl? Are they trying to? I was actually doing reporting through my text, but he never responded.
He didn't?
Yeah, I did like that Seth jumped right into that 4:20 thing just knowing I live in Colorado.
Yeah,
just threw that right, but then out, also, right out there in the beginning.
I got to be honest with you, I felt guilty about it because you also do work for the NFL Network,
right?
Which seems like an organization that might not be all that cool with just me.
James Charles, is clean.
James is look everybody. James is as clean as a whistle. Okay?
Yeah, look at
wow.
him.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, look at him. So James, it's good to have you as always, man. And you've spent a lot of time covering this team. I know people remember you covering the team back in the early part of the Bill O'Brien era, and that coincided with the beginning of DeAndre Hopkins' career. And I guess you saw him daily in his rookie year, his second year. He was really good back then. Are you surprised that he's become this good to where he's a guy who's leading the Pro Bowl balloting? He's a guy who's talked about as being the best receiver in football?
Actually, I got a great story. So if you remember in my CSN Houston days, one of my coworkers was Keenan McCardell, who's the receivers coach for the Jaguars now. And I remember we knew that they were going to take a receiver with the 27th pick, and we were going through all of them, and Keenan just didn't like Hop. He was just like, I don't know. I can't name a receiver in the league that is kind of pigeon-toed the way Hop is and has been successful. Well, like, probably 2 years ago, I'm doing a Jags game, and I mentioned it to Keenan, and I got like halfway through talking about it, and he just interrupted me and was like, I was wrong. I was dead wrong. I'll just admit it. Like, and it's funny because the growth that he made from year one to year two, you talked to Andre Johnson, who was spending so much time with him, that was a huge jump. The first year wasn't great. He wasn't polished. And the work that he has put in is the reason why he's where he's at now. And I kind of talked about it and told the story this morning on the air. And one of the things that he has worked in this last offseason was he is the guy to move the chains for this team. And they need to do that on Thursday because we know how good this run game for the Colts is, and if they stay on the field, that's trouble, so they need to extend drives. Well, everybody in the world knows Hop is getting the football, especially on third down, and he still finds a way to do it. And one of the things he did this offseason, he told me this week, was study Julian Edelman, who is one of his favorite receivers in football because he keeps the Patriots on the field. He always finds a way to go another 4 or 5 yards and knows where the chains are and has that kind of feel of the field to always keep the Patriots going. And Hop loved that about him and spent a lot of time studying that. I think you can see that this season as another added part of his game to where, you know, he always kind of breaks a tackle or finds a way to fall forward and gets the first down. It's another added part of his game to what makes him so special on top of the unbelievable hands, right? The ability to, you know, use his feet by the sideline. It's just he keeps finding different ways to make his game better each offseason, which makes him special. He's not complacent with where he's at talent-wise, and I think we've seen that as these years have gone by.
We're speaking with James Palmer from the NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at JamesPalmerTV. James, what are you hearing about Vernon Hargraves and exactly how it all went down for him in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because who's the one person that you feel like everybody could get along with? Bruce Arians, like the ultimate players coach of all time. And you know, it's kind of funny that things didn't really work out for Vernon there, but there's a couple of things that played into it. It's funny talking to him earlier this week, he's never really been in a room. And this was also at Florida. And I remember covering his pro day. He was the guy that everybody leaned on in Tampa, and he was still a young guy. And he was the guy that everybody looked to. And it was like, he was telling me this week, just like, it's great to have some veterans in the DB room, like Jonathan Joseph and guys that have been around, to where I'm not the guy that everybody's looking to. And I think that's kind of a little bit part of it, that he needs a fresh start. And I love what the Texans have done with him and Conley. And it's just like, hey, let's find talent and go see if, like, when they get here, things can be different. Because it's going to work out with maybe both, one of them probably. And I just think what they're going to try to do with him is, which to me is a little interesting, is look for him to be playing inside a little bit. And that's kind of what they have in plan a little bit right now. And maybe they see something that Tampa didn't really see. But at the same time, Tampa's trying to turn over their organization right now. And that played a little bit part of it. But I think just look for him to be used differently here than maybe he was used in Tampa.
It looks like T.Y. Hilton's going to play tonight. You said Romeo Crennel, when you talked to him earlier this week, was preparing like T.Y. Hilton was going to play. Was there ever any doubt in your mind?
He laughed at me.
What's that?
Yeah. He like laughed at me when I was like, have you been preparing for T.Y. all week? And he's like, yeah. I mean, he's going to play. He's like, there's no doubt he doesn't play. I was like, okay, all right, relax, Romeo. Okay, got it.
So the big question would be his counterpart, Will Fuller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the big question mark obviously is Fuller and Roby, right? Like with the hamstrings that they've been out for so long, can they go? And this is the hard spot that the Texans are in, right? Both of them weren't ready for last Sunday, and obviously that's why they didn't play. But the being ready for this game and having an opportunity to test those hamstrings was the difficult spot, because you don't have practices. Like, you don't have real practices on a Thursday night game week where you can actually see if you can go out and do it. So my understanding is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're trying to find some other avenues, either before or after practice, somewhere else, to see if those guys could test it a little bit. And they want to test it today on the field as well before the game to see if they can go. The hard spot they're in is, like I said, you don't get an actual practice to test the hamstring, but you really need them to play and how huge this game is. But if they get a setback in any sense, do they play again this year, right? So, like, it's such a difficult spot to read where they are with these injuries. There was a little bit, in my understanding, a small more amount of optimism with Fuller leading into the Ravens game than there was Roby. So maybe he's a little bit ahead of where Roby was. Roby's was a little bit worse than everybody kind of anticipated. So I don't know. The Texans are in a really difficult spot. I don't think there's any question T.Y. doesn't play. I think there's a lot more question marks surrounding Eric Ebron than there is T.Y. for the Colts. And I do think with Ebron, I'd put Will and Robe in the same group, as in, God, I don't really know.
Yeah, Roby's been out since week 6, the Kansas City game. Will Fuller's been out since week 7, the first game this season against the Colts. James Palmer, the NFL Network, joining us on the program. James, you spend a lot of time around this team. It's a team that, going back to Bill O'Brien's first year here, has generally been pretty good at taking bad losses and moving on from them. They're 9-1 under Bill O'Brien, following double-digit losses when they're still playing for something. What is it about this team? Is that a normal thing in your travels in the NFL? Is that a normal thing you see with NFL teams being able to kind of compartmentalize, or is there something about this particular Texans team, this head coach, maybe this quarterback, that makes this team have a superior ability to move on from losses like the one they had to the Ravens?
Well, obviously, Sean, like, the quarterback plays a part, right? Like, that's unquestionable. He keeps you in every single game. I mean, like, that they got blown out on Sunday, and that's the first time he lost a regular season game by more than 8 points, to me is remarkable. He just always finds a way to keep them in games. But I don't think it's a normal thing around the league. And that's usually when you can tell the way organizations are run. You could say it's from the top all the way down, but a lot of times it's how the leaders in your locker room operate, and it's how your coaching staff prepares them and gets them ready. It's funny, I was talking to Hop earlier this week, and I was like, when did you move on to the Colts, knowing how big of a game that was? He was like, dude, beginning of the fourth quarter, I was already thinking about the Colts. Like, it wasn't even, like, in question. I was already moved on to Indianapolis. And so I do think Bill has a big influence in how they focus and how they move on. And I talked to, you know, a couple people this week about the talent that, and this is another one of the things that makes Deshaun Watson great. And Tim Kelly told me this week, where I think he's a great player because he has the ability to just flip the script. Good play, bad play, on to the next play. Good game, bad game, on to the next game. So I talked to Deshaun about it, and he told me it actually goes all the way back to high school. I'll give his high school coach a name drop. His name's Michael Perry, and he instilled this in Deshaun in high school to where it was called snap and clear was kind of the mantra. And he's used that all the way through to where nothing ever carries on to the next game. So the point I'm making is, with your question, I think the quarterback has a big part of that because he's the exact same dude, whether they won by 40 or lost by 40, moving on to the next game. And I think Bill instills that in Deshaun as well, and he has that kind of mentality. So I think that's why the Texans never really dwell when things go bad, because their quarterback and their head coach kind of have a similar mentality of just, I don't care what happened last week or last play. As Bill always says, you're only as good as your last play. That's kind of the way that he runs the organization. I think that's why they have a pretty decent record in terms of bouncing back.
We're speaking with James Palmer from the NFL Network. James, as you were talking about that and with Deshaun Watson and the snap and clear, I started thinking about how much they've talked this year about avoiding the noise, not listening to the noise outside the organization. And I think back to various teams I've been on where sometimes it was the TV was always on NFL Network or ESPN. Other teams,
yeah,
it wasn't.
Nice plug.
Have you gotten a feel for which teams watch you guys the most? Do you ever walk into a building and you're like, oh, this guy definitely heard what Jeff Saturday, or well, it wouldn't be Jeff Saturday, this is somebody else said about him?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, if you feel like you said something, you know, a little bit questionable, do you tiptoe into that building and be like, hey, guys, and just like wondering if anybody was watching? But like, I do know there's certain teams that have TVs on in their locker room all the time. And ours is NFL Network is usually on in most of the buildings. Not Mitchell Trubisky's building. He wants all the TVs right off. He doesn't want anybody watching anything. But it does vary by group, and it's funny because like the ones that watch and the ones that pay attention to it, it doesn't really have any correlation with success at all. Some are just more interested. Some coaches and teams just don't care. It's usually up to the coach about whether they want the TVs on or not. And a lot of times it's mainly because guys are just interested in what's happening around the league. Like, yeah, when I go team to team, guys are always asking me like, they're like, wait, what game were you just at? And I'm like, oh, I just did Titans Chiefs, which I did do, which was an insane finish. And they're like, you know, oh, what's, how's so-and-so been? I played college ball with him. Like, what's up with him? Like, you know what I mean? They're just always curious about what's going on in the league. Because they're eventually going to play almost everybody. And so there's always just that curiosity, I think, that's there. The blocking it entirely out, I think it's a lot of just noise that guys say. I think they're always just kind of, I mean, you go to any guy in a locker room. JJ did it the other day. He comes out of the shower. He's like, first thing he does before he even gets dressed is he picks up his phone and starts scrolling through like Twitter. Like, you know, so they all know what's going on. I think blocking things out is just kind of like something that's kind of cute to say.
James, really appreciate you coming on. I know you've got a busy day. Everybody should tune in and watch for James,
yes,
on the NFL Network.
Wow,
also,
thanks, guys.
Follow him on Twitter at James Palmer TV. He's probably got an Instagram account.
Yeah, James Palmer, or as I like to call him, Mitchell Trubisky's boogeyman. Right? You don't want to see like
not want to see me coming.
Yeah. That's right,
he does
man.
Not want to see me coming. I'm also the only person at NRG Stadium right now. I've been running routes all morning since about 6 a.m. I'm like the only person here.
You running around like Tom Cruise in Risky Business? Do you get in your tidy whities and play a little Bob Seger?
No,
and slide around
like
in the lobby.
No, it's more like Patrick Dempsey when he was in that movie where he's in that Costco all by himself. It wasn't a Costco, but whatever, and the robbers come. You remember that old Patrick Dempsey 80s movie?
No,
where he's trapped in the building?
I got stuck.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. It's absolutely dreadful.
You said Patrick Dempsey in 80s, and I started thinking about the one where he was the...
Can't Buy Me Love.
Yeah, no.
Can't Buy Me Love on the lawnmower?
No, the one before that where he was the kid lover. The older women kept falling in love with him, and he kept getting
in trouble
for
that. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. I got to extend my Patrick Dempsey catalog.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure if JJ was listening to us and he heard that you were the only one at the stadium, he's speeding over in his, in his pickup truck right now, just to be sure.
I'm supposed to be the first one in and last one to leave.
Just watch your back, James.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'd like some company, so I wouldn't... against it.
You go over like JJ and James are going to be doing box jumps together.
That's right.
Within 45 minutes.
That's right. James Palmer, NFL Network. James, we'll see you out there later on today, man.
All right, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks for coming on. James Palmer giving us a few minutes of his time here on a game day Thursday.
As long, you guys should really watch NFL Network so he can and reach out to him. You know what? Reach out to James on Twitter and say, hey, that was awesome hearing you. You guys should be on with those guys in the morning
you
as much
should,
as possible.
Yeah. At James Palmer TV.
He's very good. When I used to be on CSN all the time, I'd go over there. I was on CSN 3 days a week when it was still here.
Yeah.
And James was always over there, and I was really impressed with him. I always expected that. Whether or not CSN would go defunct, I thought that James would do good things.
Yeah, I'm impressed. They put the video up of his hit this morning over there.
Yeah.
I'm just jealous of how good the guy looks at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, he's a very
you and I come in here, we look like we got run over by a bus.
He's going to be another Frank Reich. I'm going to be plotting ways to disfigure his face 10 years from
okay,
now.
Okay, well, hopefully
like, all right,
he's
dude,
not
you're aging
anymore.
Too well. Don't know, that's cool. Everybody, just follow him on Twitter. That makes up for the talk
right,
of disfigurement.
Right. They cancel each
everybody,
other
yeah,
out.
Just be cool. Say, hey. Hey, you were awesome, and Seth said he's definitely not going to disfigure you.
I hear that the conversion chart is a physical threat is worth 5 pumps up yeah. of somebody's Twitter account. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.